Door number 8 by Francis Rosenfeld. Door number 7. The afterlife. Where are we? Taylor looked around, trying to recognize her surroundings. There was something very familiar about the place. It felt as if she had spent a lot of time there, but so long ago, maybe in a dream. For lack of a better word, dead, he clarified, too calm for comfort. Not dead dead, just on the other side of the River Styx, visiting, sort of. Don't worry, we're going back. I didn't know one could visit, she thought, without being, you know. Sure you can, he reassured her. Well, I can, some people can, that's beside the point. Welcome to the great beyond, he smiled and raised his hands to present the environment, in an attempt to be a gracious host. To give a more specific answer to your original question, we aren't anywhere, at least not anywhere that can be pointed on a map in normal reality. We're in the world inside your mind, he suggested. You can make it look any way you wish. Then why does it look like this? I'm sure I've never been to this place, nor did I imagine it. Why does it feel so familiar? She kept looking around. Of course it feels familiar, it is your mind, you just didn't know what it looked like before. It feels a little bit like seeing your own face for the first time. Without a reflective surface, you have no way of knowing what you look like, but you can sort of recognize yourself, even if you don't understand why. Cozy, he commented upon looking around. What's that smell? Sugar plums. They're over there. She pointed to the corner of the table from which the scents of vanilla, cinnamon, and orange wafted. So, we're in heaven? That depends. Do you like sugar plums? He asked, very serious. Yes. Quite frankly, I have no idea. We're just not in life anymore. What makes you think we're dead? There could be many other explanations. He didn't answer, just pointed to a door that opened into the garden, and as she passed through it, she recognized the family plot she used to visit as a child, with the old gravestones, much older now, and new ones that she had never seen before. She found her own. The years don't match, she said, looking at the dates which read 1997 to 2014. Oh, no, I'm pretty sure they're accurate, he checked. But, it's 2016, she protested. So? So, I'm still alive, she insisted, starting to panic. Alive is such a relative concept, don't you think? I thought we already established that in about half of the possible realities you are most likely dead. So, this is one of them? She asked. No, I told you. This is the world inside your mind, a world of your own making. So, am I alive or dead? She insisted. Right now you are dead, I think. At least if somebody were to walk into the room, they would find you quite dead. He turned towards her just in time to restrain the jolt of her shock. Don't worry, the door is locked. I didn't want to risk an accidental autopsy before we return. According to the principles of physics, as long as you are inside that locked room, you are both alive and dead. But that's impossible, right? Isn't science great? He burst out laughing. I don't feel dead, she checked herself. I don't feel different at all? Yeah, that's a common problem, most people don't, that's why it is so hard to convince the ones who don't know it yet. Whatever you are is the same whether you're in a body or not, and since this world is your own creation, you can manipulate everything in it just as you used to in life. I'm glad your mind didn't recreate your dorm room, it would have been extremely challenging to persuade you that you are not actually there. But it feels so real. Taylor couldn't recover from the shock. She touched the surface of the table and felt the fine wood grain under her fingers. This can't be right, I don't believe you. Care to look at those tombstones again? He asked, and Taylor realized that she'd been transported between the cemetery and the room twice, and didn't even acknowledge it. As I said, very hard to become aware of your state, the mind just ignores the inconsistencies it can process. She looked at the newer tombstones in the back. I don't know a Kale in Bradford. She hesitated before she had the chance to read the years. I didn't expect you would, she was born 40 years after your passing, probably a great niece. He commented. A great niece from whom? I don't have any siblings. Apparently in this life you did. She read the tombstone again. Kale and Jane Bradford 2057-2149. Yep, I must surely be dead by now in any reality, she muttered to herself, and then it occurred to her to ask out loud, What year is it? 2190-something, I'm not entirely sure. Why are you smiling? Just waiting for you to bring up the ghost of Christmas future, she said. No moralizing story? No suggestions for bettering myself? What would be the point of that? You've been dead for almost 80 years. But we just, she mumbled, more and more confused as time passed. Oh, time is a human construct. There is no time here. So, you can't explain to me where here is, exactly? She tried to get some clarification again. The simplest description of this place is that you are here when you are no longer anywhere else. Who else is here? Whoever you want it to be. It is your world. I see that for the time being it seems to be empty, campus life a little stressful, is it? I can remember dying. Nobody does, why would we want to carry that burden? As I said, many people simply continue living their lives right from where they left off, surroundings, occupation, family, friends and all, and it is absolutely impossible to convince them that they are dead. There is no reason for them to believe you. Nothing really changed. The mind is a powerful creative tool, it can generate anything you want it to. Recreating things that already existed is the easiest thing for it to do. What happened to Christine? And Matt? Funny you should ask that, since you only had the chance to meet Christine. The thing is, over here, whatever you think happened in her life, happened, since this reality is of your own making. It might look like one of her possible lives, or a blend of several of them, who knows? You could go into one of them and find out for sure. So, when I'm dead, she emphasized, for real dead, I cannot go back? You can do whatever you want, he said. But I would be going to a different, a future life, she tried to clarify. There is no different future life. There are infinite alternatives of the life you have. Had. Details. If you cross into life, then you're alive. If you cross out of life, then you're not alive. You're just on opposite banks of the Silver River, that's all, but you're always you. But wait, if I cross back into life, how would I know it is real, and not some reality my mind constructed, just like the one here? Ah, you finally got Maya. You mean nothing is real? Taylor whimpered, on the verge of tears. If it weren't for the inexplicable back-and-forth teleportation, the lump in her throat and the knot in her stomach would have assured her that she was very much alive. What would be the benefit of feeling pain when you don't have a body? A body with sensory perception. A physical body. A body made of matter. Since her current situation checked all the boxes, she gave up trying to figure it out. Quite the opposite. Everything is, you just have to choose which reel you want to look at the time, everything gets to be a bit overwhelming. So, right now am I dead or alive? She tried again to figure out the nature of her current state. Technically, you're both. Not a common situation, grant you, but statistically possible. He stopped to evaluate the stupefied look on her face. A lot more things are possible than you know. But if I died at 17, then who traveled with you from college in 2016, and how are we almost 200 years later? You are trying to apply the solution of a particular problem to the general case, and for this purpose you introduce two variables which do not pertain to existence as a whole, time and a unique location. You are all of those used during all of those times, both alive and dead. But why am I here? She asked, hoping for a more general answer to the question, something relating to the meaning of existence, the nature of God, the shape of the universe, but instead she got the answer she expected, which comes to prove that, even in death, the law of causality is implacable. That gave her comfort, believe it or not, because the mind needs rules, a structure to bend itself around, a repeatable experience to engender the feeling of being in control, a realm to contain it. You are here because you went through door number 7. Her guide obliged. Sugar plum? She absentmindedly picked a plum from the plate, and as she bit into it, she noticed that she was back in room number 8, curled up in her chintz chair with a blanket around her knees. It took her a second to adjust to being back, not sure why she was still chewing on an imaginary sugar confection, but more importantly, why she was still holding it in her hand. Are you going to finish it? Her teacher asked, in a light conversational tone. I thought you said you like them. Since she didn't answer, he grabbed his notebook and started reviewing the class notes and jotted down a few words here and there, nodding occasionally when he found something of interest. He raised his eyes from the papers, eventually scrunched up his nose to adjust his glasses and coughed, a little awkward. "Well, it seems that you have finished all the required classwork. I'm going to give you a passing grade. Congratulations for completing the Wayfinding Systems course, and I wish you all the best in your future studies." He got up, signaling that it was time to go. "Wait." She dragged her feet to the door. "What if I have questions? Was any of this real?" "Real?" He laughed. "What is that?" He was standing in the doorway leading to the corridor, inside the door that never opened, the one with the number 8 fastened through the middle, and even under the circumstances, Taylor couldn't help but notice that the number was askew again. She subconsciously decided to straighten it when the first opportunity presented itself. "Enjoy your sugar plum." For the next few days, Taylor kept staring at the door between rooms, just to make sure whether it was still there, because it was becoming increasingly clear to her that this whole door situation looked a lot more like her mind was taking a break from reality than that something out of the natural order of things had actually happened. She kicked herself for not attempting to get solid proof of any of the events, and she couldn't figure out what, if anything, would constitute proof. She decided to document at least what was there, even if it didn't mean much, before she woke up one day to notice there was no door, or room number 8. Any rational being would have done that, all things considered. She felt really stupid taking pictures of the empty room with the doors, because they look like average doors, no more, no less, and she didn't even get to walk through more than one of them anyway. What was that going to prove? Despite her misgivings, she sent the pictures to Christine, who answered her with a series of perplexed emoticons and the ultimate laconic comment. ? "Why would you send me pictures of doors, Taylor? I've seen doors before, they look pretty much like that," she asked a few hours later when she came to visit. Taylor had struggled to find a rational motive for sending her friend the pictures, but couldn't come up with one. "It's just the doors in room number 8, I wanted to know your opinion." She made up an absurd explanation on the spot, explanation which only served to confirm to her friend that she was going off the rails. "You took pictures of this guy's room? You worry me a little, girl. I thought he was creepy, but you take the cake? Stalkerish much?" Christine couldn't believe what she was hearing and seeing, especially since this kind of behavior was so unlike anything her friend would consider doing under normal circumstances. "No, no, it's not what you think." Taylor tried to explain her logic to Christine, managing only to dig herself deeper. "No, you see, I just wanted you to have them, in case I need to retrieve them later." "Retrieve them? They're pictures of doors. Need them for what?" Christine asked, really concerned. "You know, just in case." Taylor didn't know how to justify sending a packet of door pictures to Christine's phone without looking completely insane. "I wasn't going to say anything, but there comes a point, Taylor. You are not okay. You spend all of your time in this room, stalking this guy, who I didn't think was good for you to begin with, doing God knows what, gone for days on end without a word. It's a miracle that your grades haven't started sliding down the hill," she said, holding her friend's hand in both of hers in an imploring gesture. "What are you doing with your life? Did he get you into drugs or something? I don't know what you're doing, but I'm sure it's not okay, so I'll be the friend I'd like to have myself and will drag you out of this room if I have to. You are 19, you need to get out more, meet new people, see new places, live your life, you're only young once." Taylor made a brief mental note that this wasn't necessarily the case, but had the presence of spirit to shut up. "Who's this guy, anyway? I bet you didn't even ask him about his first name, like I beg you. You're going to end up in a cult or something, or worse, dead before your time, and I will never be able to forgive myself if that happened. Get dressed, we're going out now." "Where?" Taylor asked. "Doesn't matter. Anywhere that's not here is good. Did that locksmith ever come to fix your lock?" Christine asked, and then thought that if her friend was into some dangerous substances, it was better if the door didn't lock, just in case she had to bust it in an emergency. "And where is Mr. Bradford right now?" Christine asked with a hint of sarcasm. "I don't know. We finished the project, Christine, I told you it was only work." "Of course it was, thank goodness it's over. Come on, I want you to meet somebody." She smiled encouragingly. Oh, dear God, please don't let her fix me up with someone again, Taylor thought, remembering that it was Christine who had arranged, willingly or accidentally, several of her encounters with her neighbor, and paused to consider the wisdom of her choices, however well-intentioned. Have you heard from your mother recently? Christine tried to change the subject in a manner that would reintegrate Taylor into the normality of her old life. No, Taylor remembered bitterly. I sent her a couple of texts, but she didn't answer. She must be busy. I'm sure she is. Christine tried to comfort her, all the way thinking that if Taylor's mother would not have been so emotionally unavailable, maybe Taylor wouldn't find herself in this unfortunate situation, entangled with suspicious characters, and getting in who knows what kind of trouble. Her friend didn't want to talk to her about her experiences during the last month, and for Christine that was proof enough that something untoward must have happened. Do you want me to try and contact her? Maybe I have better luck? Or maybe she would feel more uncomfortable ignoring a total stranger, Christine thought. I'm not one to judge, but somebody should intervene. This is nothing short of neglect. Some people just can't be bothered to care about anyone other than themselves. She felt good about taking charge of the situation, and then remembered she had promised Matt they were going to meet in 15 minutes to sample the pastries in the new shop that had opened on campus the day before, excuse herself a million times for not being able to spend time with Taylor, like she wanted to, made sure that the latter didn't get upset with her and left her there, all dressed up with nowhere to go, and went to meet her sweetheart. Well, as long as she cares, Taylor thought, without getting upset. She had considered going out anyway, the room had started to feel a little claustrophobic, and she thought the fresh air will do her good. Fall had arrived in full force, there was a chill in the air at dusk, a Christmas made cheerful by the splendid colors of the turning leaves. Large flocks of birds were clouding the sky and making a terrible racket, unsettled by the approach of winter, they flew from one large tree to another, and changed direction unexpectedly, all at the same time, flawlessly choreographed by the perfection of their natural instincts. They were the only living presence on campus, except for Taylor. There must have been some event everyone else went to, because the campus looked deserted, like vacation had already started, even though they were right in the middle of the semester. Taylor did a mental review of the work she had left to do for the classes she was taking, pleased with the grades she was getting so far and a little surprised, considering the limited amount of time and attention she had dedicated to them. Despite endless interruptions of her life by events which did not pass the acid test of reality, she seemed to do just fine. Maybe Christine was right after all, she knew her friend meant well, just look at the things she'd been doing lately. If somebody sent her picture after picture of doors, she would have considered calling somebody to assess that person's sanity, too. It just wasn't something a reasonable person would do. She decided that this experiment of hers, even if it seemed to be mandatory in nature, had taken a toll on her functioning as a normal human being, and her first priority, if she still considered herself rational, would have to be to put the experience behind her and focus on things people of her age did: her schoolwork, her social life, and her dating. She felt a lot better about herself after this analysis, and was so glad she had decided to go out for a walk, that she didn't even realize her steps had taken her to the library, without planning to do so. She only stopped when she found herself in the middle of the tall and drafty reading room. The large table was covered in books, as always. Somebody must have been working on their metaphysics thesis, because that seemed to be the theme of the table this time, with mounds of books spanning from religion to philosophy, and a lot of psychology in between. She looked around and discovered the cause of this soul-searching frenzy. Right in front of her eyes, on one of the large columns which supported the skylight, was a poster announcing a new lecture series, Between Lives, A History of Metempsychosis. Well, then, she thought, with bitter irony. That must be where everybody went, it looks like I'm missing out. She lifted her eyes as she turned around to exit the reading room, and noticed the North Star glowing through the glass of the skylight. She wondered why she never paid attention to the night sky before, wondered why would it be so wrong if she took some time out of her busy schedule to hang out at the campus observatory, and maybe look at some star charts to learn where to find the constellations, and how to follow their travels across the firmament. She was sure it was the North Star, at least she thought so, maybe it wasn't, she didn't know that much about stars. The world seemed much larger, all of a sudden, full of places that were very far away and of things she knew nothing about, and even if she wasn't yet sure whether her experience had been real, that life was indeed without end, she was happy to believe it, happy to know she'd have enough time to figure out all of those things out there, those beautiful things that daily life passes by, confident in its priority status, and relegates them to the entertainment and leisure section, to be browsed through quickly, when one wants to get one's mind off of things. Life is different when you have time, and Taylor had time, because at the age of 19 she had inadvertently walked into eternity. She wrote down the schedule of the lecture series, not sure yet if she wanted to attend, and exited the halls, just as the speaker made the announcement that the library would close in 15 minutes. Another week passed, with class assignments and social events, and a lot of fretting and preparation for the upcoming midterms. In the rush of activities, Taylor almost forgot about the weirdness next door. She had decided not to pay it a lot of attention, since she couldn't explain it anyway, or figure out how this whole experience would fit into her life. Christine and Matt were spending almost all of their time together now, and since Taylor seemed to have come to her senses, Christine didn't stop by as often as she used to. Taylor took her comment about the door lock to heart, and decided to stop by the locksmith's shop to see what was the holdup in repairing the lock. The guy behind the counter was new and very young, probably a student trying to make ends meet. He didn't seem to be enthusiastic about his task and moved about begrudgingly, with a level of inefficiency that seemed almost far-fetched. He looked through the invoices and didn't find hers, which, obviously, explained why nobody ever showed up. Taylor had to spend more than an hour going through old credit card records and through the invoices until she managed to find what she was looking for. Her name was misspelled and the address was wrong. How do these people manage to stay in business? She wondered, looking at the guy who seemed to have gotten tired from all the looking at her, while she did all the digging through the files. He shoved his earbuds deeper inside his ear canals in an attempt to permanently plug them, thus never, ever having to interact with people like her again. She had to speak very loudly to get over the sound of music, set up a firm appointment for the repair, and left with absolutely no hope of it happening as planned. Oh, well, such was life. She almost bumped into her neighbor on her way out the shop, and discovered, to her surprise, that she never expected to see him again, even though he continued to live in the room next to hers. The encounter gave her the sinking feeling that her trip to the Twilight Zone wasn't over yet, and she could get dragged into who knows what else at any second. "So, did your door lock get fixed?" he asked. She hesitated before answering, because she simply knew he must have had the answer before she did anyway, and wondered what was the point of this elaborate theatrical production, but decided to play along anyway. "No, it seems there was a mishap with the invoice. Somebody's coming on Friday." "Are they now? Well, that's good. How have you been?" he reverted to standard conversation. "Fine. Busy with schoolwork. You?" She continued the absurd filler conversation, not really sure why she was engaged in it, mind reading and all. "Oh, I just learned that I have a lot of stuff to do, a deadline just got pushed back, my schedule is winding up very tight. On an unrelated note, wouldn't you know it? I hung out with Matt and Christine the other day, and they seem like very nice people. Are you still friends with Christine?" "She loathes you," Taylor thought. "How does this guy get to spend time with the lovebirds, when they avoid me like I'm contagious or something?" She was really jealous of her neighbor spending any time with her friends. Doesn't one get to keep anything for oneself? Curiosity and peeve got the better of her, and she decided to fish out the details of this newborn association. She got just the right question to ease into details. "You know, Christine had asked me repeatedly, but I never remembered to ask you. What is your given aim?" She really wanted to know. "Taylor." "Of course it is," she replied, with a wry smile. "That went well, I feel like I'm talking into a recorder. Not much different from the last hour and a half at the locksmith shop. At least I can tell Christine that I tried, if she ever finds time in her packed schedule to talk to me again." The whole endeavor struck her as an irritating waste of time, but she was saved from it by the most improbable of sources, her mother, who texted her with the surprise announcement that she was coming to visit. Taylor tensed immediately, knowing that the sight of a dorm door with a broken lock was going to unleash an avalanche of criticism on top of her head, and wondered if there was anything she could do to make the repair happen before her mother's visit. But since she didn't know precisely when that visit was going to occur, she unconsciously wrung her hands, helpless. "I haven't seen you in yoga class lately. You decided to give that up?" the other Taylor asked, just to make conversation. "I didn't have the time, with schoolwork, things tend to get very hectic," she excused herself. "There's always time," he suggested, "you just have to find it." "Why is he here?" Taylor asked herself. This whole casual conversation felt so patently absurd she wondered if she had accidentally walked through some invisible door and slipped into another La La Land reality alternative that she was going to have to dig herself out of later. She decided to continue the conversation, because all of that walking in silence was getting awkward. "Are you teaching any other classes this quarter?" "As a matter of fact, I am just starting a new one, if you're interested, in about a week or so." He stared inquisitively, waiting for an answer. "Well, I only have myself to blame, I walk right into that one," Taylor thought, trying to come up with a way to extricate herself from any commitment. "Yeah, you're right about that, you'll probably be too busy for the rest of this year, why with all of your coursework and life and such. I'll see you around," he smiled and split, changing direction so suddenly he almost scared her. She continued the rest of her trip alone. Her room was quiet, what a blessing, and its details felt familiar and comforting, all but that cursed door which seemed to mock her from the wall. Why was that door there? It couldn't be an accident, it was way too convenient to have happened randomly. She hesitated before walking back into that room, worried that something unexpected was going to happen, like it always did, and this time she will bear full responsibility for the consequences. The door had been left wide open, and that annoyed her a little, because she was sure she'd closed it before she left. "I'm like a gerbil in a glass box, my whole life is being lived for me, I wonder why I even bother to make plans." She got up to close the door and stopped right in front of it, with her hand on the handle. Room number 8 looked exactly as before, and she was suddenly embarrassed when she remembered sending the door pictures to Christine. What on earth was she thinking? "Is that my student ID?" She squinted at a tiny plastic rectangle hanging on the edge of the chintz chair. Her life was getting completely out of hand, she chastised herself, she simply had to cut all of this reality distortion out, and focus on her goals for the future and bona fide work, this whole adventure into the unknown simply had to stop. She walked into room number 8, decisively, picked up her student ID, and turned around to go back to her room. She got a little confused, something didn't add up. She knew there were only 8 doors, and that at the end of the class, one of the doors always opened to lead her back to her room, but for the life of her, she couldn't understand how she never noticed until then that that door, the one which always opened, was in fact door number 8. "It is settled, I'm too gullible to live. I can't believe I fell for this guy's trick this entire time, no going through door number 8 indeed. This should teach me, what in the world was I thinking, I should really thank Christine for looking out for me, even if I seem to have reached the limits of her patience and understanding. How come I never find myself on the other side of the table in this endless series of sucker bets? I just hope to God that Christine doesn't bring up this insanity when my mother shows up, I'll never hear the end of it." She walked towards the door, her mind still racing. What a prize, this guy. Must be nice being him, he'd never find himself in this kind of situation, I'm sure. Why do I always do? She was able to see her room through the open door, and could hardly wait to get back to it, forget the whole thing happened, and find a way to persuade the student council to allow her to switch to a different dorm as soon as possible, even if that meant sharing with a roommate. At least it would be human. God, I wish I were male, she thought as she walked through the door. These things never seem to happen to men, for some reason, they never seem to get unwelcome advice, their life being run for them, endless judging of their looks, gossip about their private lives. Her mind wound itself up progressively, and by the time she hit her bed, she was absolutely furious, and felt very, very tired, and displeased with the way her life had unfolded so far, and wanted to blame somebody for it, so she directed all of her frustration to the immediate cause of her problem, the guy in the other room, who didn't seem to assume any responsibility for messing up her life. That's what they do, she thought. Men? They upend everybody's life, and then, when the proverbial fan starts running, they make themselves conveniently unavailable and let the suckers clean up the mess. This thought brought up the anger she was still feeling over the untimely passing of her father, something she'd never gotten over, even if she knew that being angry at a loved one for being dead was completely irrational, and she blamed him for it too, for getting into that accident that clearly wasn't his fault, thus steering hers and her mother's lives into an unwelcome direction. "Great, now I'm too tense to sleep," she thought, eyes wide open in the room that had gotten so dark she couldn't see her hands in front of her face. "I'm going to be tired and not able to pay attention in class tomorrow, on top of it all. That's all I need, more problems."